Mascati, masuerese. That's the noon greeting. Good afternoon. Have you spent your day well? And the answer is, da suera, I spent it. Now, how many of you like to tell your spouse, da suera, I spent it. I spent all of it. We're glad to be here this morning. We're very grateful to be here this morning to thank you in person for your very generous VBS offering. It was awesome. We were really impressed that with your generosity and your willingness to partner with us in helping AIDS orphans. If we can go to the next slide. I want to talk about the power of legacy. And I want to tell you the story of Lena Vivian. And Lena Vivian was born in 1892, back in the horse and buggy days. And she was one of seven children born to Cora Alice and Charles Winton. And they had a very colorful, I guess would be the polite way to say it, existence. Now, Charles Winton was a dreamer, a rainbow chaser. He couldn't hold a job down to save his life. So their modus operandi as a family was that he'd get a job, pay a month's rent, they'd move into a house, they'd stay the second month, and then the night before they were evicted, they'd pack up in the middle of the night and go to the next town. And they did this all the time. And you can imagine this disruption to Lena's education as a kid because they were in a different town every 60 days. And so you can think, you know, this is a highly disrupted education for these kids. Well, at one point in time, Charles Winton was talking about a get-rich-quick scheme. He said, you know, those Indian squaws have oil wells in Oklahoma. I need to go to Oklahoma and marry an Indian squaw. We'll have oil wells, and then we'll be rich. And, of course, it was like every other harebrained scheme that he'd come up with. It went in one ear and out the other, but then he disappeared. And for 7 years, he was gone. And they weren't sure if he was safe, if he was okay, if he was even alive. But here's Cora Alice with seven kids to raise. Lena Vivian was one of the older ones. But, you know, she had little tiny children. She couldn't work. She had babies to take care of. And so Lena Vivian dropped out of school as a third grader. And she went to work in the onion fields. And that's hard work because it's a lot of weeding, a lot of on your hands and knees kinds of stuff, harvesting, all those kinds of things, because that was the only way to put food on the table. And so this is how they lived. It was tough. It was almost impossible. But 7 years later, Charles Winton came home, and Cora Alice was gracious enough to take him back like nothing had happened. But he had a terrible secret. He came home with syphilis. And Cora Alice ended up with syphilis. This was back when there was no treatment for it whatsoever. And so the syphilis settled in her brain, and the seven children watched their mother lose her mind over a period of years. And Cora Alice spent the last 5 years of her life at the Logansport Hospital for the Insane in Logansport, Indiana. And even when those children were in their 60s and 70s, when they got together, all they could talk about is how much they hated their father for destroying their mother's life and destabilizing the family completely. Next slide. Helena Vivian married George Alfred in 1910, and that marriage produced eight children, seven boys and a girl. And unfortunately, the girl, Elizabeth Regina, died at birth. And no one knows what happened, but George Alfred kicked the doctor all the way down the stairs after the baby died. And he knew that, Elizabeth was the fifth child. He knew that Lena Vivian would pine after this daughter, this lost daughter. And so he took the baby and buried her on their farm in Whitley County, Indiana, and never told a soul where he buried the baby. And George Alfred took that secret to his grave. No one still knows where Elizabeth Regina is buried. And Lena Vivian saw it as a huge betrayal. She used to accuse George of burying her in the hog lot. And he said, I did not bury our daughter in the hog lot. But, Lena Vivian saw it as a betrayal. But that wasn't the end of the trouble for Lena Vivian. A few years later, sorry about that. I've got this asthma thing going, sorry. A few years later, a young son, Mark, who was 12 years old, contracted a very rare form of cancer from a bruise on his ankle. And Mark endured 12 major surgeries, which included 6 amputations on his right leg. And they never, ever got all the cancer, and so he died as an 18-year-old shortly after he finished high school. And the difficulty in all of that is the youngest boys were toddlers. And Mark was a morphine addict at that point in time to control his pain, could not handle sharp noises. And the two little ones were banging pots and pans in the kitchen playing. And so it was a very, very high-stress time for Lena Vivian, but it just tore her heart out to lose an 18-year-old son. Just absolutely broke her heart. A few years later, she had a son, Mike. He was the son of promise. He was the brightest one of the bunch, valedictorian of his class at Indiana University, got the dream job with an insurance company in Boston, Massachusetts, and then World War II happened. And so Mike went off to war. He was blown to pieces by tank fire in Florence, Italy. And once again, Lena Vivian was crushed. Her world was turned upside down. It was too much. And it just, you know, more than broke her heart. It was far too much. Many years later, a son, Robert, who had heart trouble all of his life, had a massive heart attack and died at 55. And once again, she had to bury another one of her children. So she buried 4 of her children in her lifetime, and it was absolutely devastating. But Lena Vivian wasn't completely destroyed by it because she had 19 grandchildren to think about. But she had one that was absolutely her favorite. And these two clicked and meshed like you would not believe. Now, Lena Vivian only had a 3rd grade education. She had a master's level understanding of horticulture. And she passed that love of horticulture onto this grandchild. And it was just an amazing relationship. She was always positive, always smiling, always pouring into this grandchild, always encouraging him. She loved him without any conditions whatsoever. And it was exactly what this grandchild needed. And I have to tell you that I am that grandchild. Now, you talk to the other 18 grandchildren, they remember her as deeply wounded, conflicted, crabby a lot of the times, not so friendly to them. But the favorite grandchild remembers her always smiling, always encouraging. She was the oxygen that child needed in the middle of an abusive childhood. And so her legacy is complex. And some of us are going to have a legacy that's complex, huh? Life is messy, isn't it? Anybody have a life that wasn't messy? Yeah, we need to have chat. But Lena was like oxygen to me as a child. Now, this picture you're looking at is George and Lena in 1957. And that's me she's holding. Susan swears I still make that face. I don't think so. But, you know, the tragedy for me as that favorite grandchild was that, you know, she was 65 and he was 72 when I was born. So they were already retired. My dad came very late in life. You know, he was, Lena Vivian was 47 and George was 53 when my dad was born. And so we didn't have a lot of time together, but it was very high quality time. But I want to think about, you know, what kind of a legacy are we going to leave behind? We're all going to leave a legacy. Is it going to be positive? Is it going to be encouraging? What are people going to remember about us? Let's go to the next slide. But what is God's plan for legacy? He has quite a bit to say about it. It's kind of interesting. So what do we do to use the Bible to guide us? Let's go to the next slide. Okay, we're going to put the glasses on. Okay, now we've got words. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. And you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands I'm giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you're at home and when you're away on a journey. when you're lying down and when you're getting up again. This is Deuteronomy 6, 5 to 7. So what's the time frame? It's all the time, isn't it? Okay, are we telling? You know, it's interesting. God always has at least, in most families, has at least three generations living at any time. So that's at least two generations telling the youngest generation how great God is, how powerful God is, how he's intervened and protected us and loved us and on and on and on. And so that's one of the greatest legacies we can leave is passing our faith to the little ones. Next slide. We will not hide these truths from our children, but we'll tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord. We'll tell of his power and the mighty miracles he did. Psalm 78, 4. Once again, we're not going to keep it quiet. We don't want to keep it quiet. Because the truth is, when we start telling the children and the grandchildren about how powerful God is, how wonderful he is, this is building a foundation underneath them. I don't have to worry about not being, you know, I don't have to worry about being an orphan because I have a father in heaven who's going to take care of me. You know, there's all of this undergirding that comes when we pass on our faith. Next slide. Great is the Lord. He's the most worthy of praise. His greatness is beyond discovery. Let each generation tell its children of his mighty acts. Psalm 145, 3 to 4, I think. That part looks really small. But, yeah, I'm in the large print Bible club, sorry. But again, he's so worthy of praise. He's done so much. And living in Zimbabwe, it's mind-boggling what he's done. We should be dead. If it wasn't for the Father intervening in his sovereignty, we would not be standing here alive today. We've been held at gunpoint. We've been poisoned. We've been threatened. It's gone on and on and on. But God's been faithful to keep us, preserve us, protect us. And in all those incidents, he loves to show his power, and I love telling people about how he does it because it's enriching, it's faith-building, it's all good. Next slide. I could have no greater joy than to hear that my children live in the truth. 3 John 1:4. Now, my youngest son is a minister. He's 32 now, isn't he? 32 years old. He does some of the most effective ministry I've ever seen anybody do. And Susan and I look at each other and say, we're just boogerheads. How did this kid turn out like this? You know, it's a miracle he turned out at all. But we gave him that foundation. We shared our faith. And one of the most important things he said, I'm so grateful you took me to Zimbabwe to see how much people struggle to get from one day to the next day. It gave me a perspective on the world I would never have gotten in Indiana when I was playing on my video games. And you changed who I am in a very drastic way. I'm so grateful you took the time to take me to another country so that I could discover that faith is something you have to do. And so he's an awesome kid, and he just does amazing things. And it's a very tender thing to us because our oldest son was killed in a freak accident as a 20-year-old. In 2001, and that pulled the rug out from under us in a very big way. But Ian has been such a delight. His wife is a delight. You know, we started praying for our kids' spouses when they were babies. And Heidi is 140% of everything we ever asked for Ian. She does tremendous ministry. She's a good mother. She homeschools. She's got all kinds of stuff going on, and she's just an amazing individual. Next slide. So what will be your legacy? Take a minute. Okay, how are people going to remember you? I don't see a lot of people smiling in the background. It's like, oh my gosh, what will they think, you know? How will I be remembered? And we just want to think about that. Sometimes we need to think about what we're going to leave behind. I had open heart surgery 7 years ago, and that was a moment of pause because I went to Mayo Clinic for a checkup, and they said, you're out of time. We're doing surgery Thursday. And so it was, oh boy, you know, this may be it kind of a thing. So you start thinking about those things, but don't wait until you've had open heart. Start on it now. Next slide. Well, because of your generosity with VBS, Eden Ministries is part of your legacy. And part of that, what's going on with that, is you're giving some of the most vulnerable children on the entire planet hope, You're giving them a future, you're giving them an education, you're helping them become healthy. It's a whole range of things, but they're becoming giants in the kingdom. They're movers and shakers in the kingdom. They are going to do tremendous things for Jesus. And you're a part of that. That's part of your legacy now. And I hope you feel good about that because it's huge. It's absolutely huge. One of the most haunting things for Susan and I right now is to think how easy it would have been for us to have stayed in our careers in Indiana. At a very comfortable six-figure income. You know, I was director of landscape architecture at a large architectural firm. We did projects in 38 states and six foreign countries. And Susan had her own business, and she taught school, vocational home economics. And we had a really good life. We spent 8 years and $1 billion restoring an old farmstead that was perfect. And Susan had started telling people, I'm never moving again. Yeah, never tell the Lord never, because you'll end up in Africa. And some of you are really terrified by that whole idea. And the funniest part about our going to Zimbabwe, Africa was never, ever on our radar screen. Not once. It just wasn't there. So Lord does amazing things. But these kids have a future because of your generosity. And it not only changes their lives, it changes history. Because these kids are coming into the kingdom, they're witnesses for Jesus. They're doing things that will change their world. And that's a huge thing. Next slide. The evangelism team has been able to start 17 churches and 6 Bible studies in some very, very remote areas. And you really have to be brave at these baptisms in the lake, because there are crocodiles and sometimes hippos and tons of parasites and bacteria in there that would make you very, very sick. And we've been to many baptisms where we've had 2 guys in the water with poles to push the crocodiles away so we can finish, okay? Now, we don't have any wishy-washy conversions because of that. I mean, if you put a crocodile in this thing, see how many people line up to be baptized. But the truth is, you're part of a rescue. You're rescuing people from animism. And animism is so exhausting because these people are terrified of what dead relatives are going to do to them from the grave. They have witchcraft and people putting curses. There's all this terrible stuff going on all the time. And you're helping put an end to that. You're releasing people from a prison that they can hardly figure out how to get away from. And that's a huge, huge thing. Yeah, don't ever underestimate that. Next slide. Elijah and Saru were married in early July. They're 2 Eden kids that grew up. They did everything right. We threw a beautiful wedding for them because they were careful to honor Jesus every step of the way. And so we're very delighted about it, but we're sending them out as missionaries, and that's part of your legacy. You're sending them out as missionaries to Hurungwe, which is a very isolated region, a lot of people, but no electricity, no water. I mean, it's very primitive, but these 2 want to go minister to people. And it's a huge thing. They're going to have a tuck shop where they sell things that people need. They're going to put in a well, have water. They'll be the source of drinking water for everyone within miles of them. She's got nurse's training. She's training as an herbalist. She would do. She'll be an herbal practitioner. It's a licensed industry in Zimbabwe. So she's going to do. They're going to take care of a lot of people, and they're going to introduce them to Jesus in the process. And that's a huge deal. So we're very excited about Elijah and Saru. Next slide. We've got Leo and Sungai have just arrived at Eden. They moved into our house a week after we left. And Leo's a financial planner and a chartered accountant, equivalent of a CPA. Does investment projects all over the world, but he is an evangelist. And it was interesting when the Lord started telling him he needed to be an evangelist, he wanted him to do that full time. They went to a church about 2 blocks from their house called Movement. And while he was in the worship service, he thought, these are nice people, I like these people. But he felt like the Holy Spirit was telling him, go forward at the altar call. And he said, I don't want to do that. I don't need to go forward. I'm a solid Christian. I don't need to go forward. But he just felt like it was insistent, so he went forward. Immediately, the pastor of the church walks right up to him and says, you have a calling on your life what's holding you back from your calling? He said, well, I feel like the Lord's calling me to do evangelism in Doma, but we don't have housing. And he said, meet me with the elders right after the service. And so he did, and they raised $50,000 to build them a house in about 3 weeks, which for an African congregation to do that is miraculous. You know, it's just the Lord has his hand on these guys. And so Ngai has nurses training. I think she has a couple things she wants to do to actually get certified in a couple things, but she's also a midwife. So the family is a huge addition. Leo is all passion. I love being around Leo. He's like having oxygen because he's so passionate. And so we're glad to have them as part of the Eden family. Next slide. Clayton and Holly Womack will be arriving in September. Clayton will head up our online degree programs. We're actually going to be able to do that right in Doma. And so we won't be sending quite as many kids overseas or in other parts of the country. These are kids that want to be pastors. They want to do evangelism. So we're going to teach them a vocation. They'll raise chickens or whatever to have a little cash flow. And then they'll get their degrees, but that allows them to minister to the poorest of the poor. Now, they did a census a couple years ago. We have 226,000 people living on this plateau we live on. It's virgin wilderness on three sides of this plateau. It's at the end of the road. There's nothing beyond Doma except wilderness. And it's just... it's going to be quite a thing to reach out to. Most of those people are in extremely deep poverty. They were moved out onto the farms after the farms were taken away from their owners. And they were told, you're master farmers because your skin is dark. And they didn't have the resources they needed. They didn't have the tools or equipment. And so most of them are trapped in a very, very deep kind of poverty. And if you saw how they lived, it would take your breath away. It's difficult. So that's who they're going to be ministering to. But Clayton will be the one overseeing the online education. And everyone who's around him says he's the person who's the most like Jesus I've ever encountered. So we're looking forward to having him on board. He'll be my next door neighbor. I'm looking forward to that. I'll pick his brain. Next slide. The Engedi Study Center, which is where this online learning will happen, is under construction. And we've got a new construction method that we're using is slip form concrete. It goes very fast. It's a very, very strong building. It's 70-year construction instead of the 20-year we've been doing. The potential with this thing is huge. It's very, very big. When our students, our older teens, kids in their early 20s, go out on these evangelism teams, the reaction in the community is amazing. These are Eden kids. These are orphans. We thought they were trained pastors. They handle the word of God really well. They know what they're talking about. Well, yeah, they had a good upbringing. And so we're going to give them more tools to do an even better job. So the Engedi Study Center is in the works. It's something that's coming up. Next slide. The Early Childhood Development Center is running extremely well. The excitement with this new preschool is that because if we have a new building, we can take in children from the community. And this is the only Jesus they're going to see. And so it's very exciting for us to be able to bring preschoolers in from the community and introduce them to Jesus. We use accelerated Christian education homeschool curriculum. We start them as three-year-olds in play school, then preschool, then kindergarten. They're fluent in English after that third year. Everybody wants their kids fluent in English. That's the key to a good job later in life. And so it's a huge deal. But the ministry to the community is significant, and that's part of your legacy now. It's a good thing. Next slide. We're taking over the Keegan House Orphanage. Excuse me. Time for another sip. We were asked by friends of ours who started this orphanage to take it over. They're in the United Kingdom for medical treatment. They will not be back in the foreseeable future. And so they've asked us to take over this orphanage. It's 75 miles south of where we are currently. But it's another opportunity. It's on a major highway. There are a number of buildings, tremendous infrastructure for vocational education. So what we're hoping is we can build cottages, get these kids in a family setting, get them out of a dormitory setting. That's one of the things we feel is important. Our children need to grow up in a family. If they grow up in a dormitory, they don't know how to live. The family dynamics never click. They don't learn how to live in a family if they've never seen one. So we want our kids in families. And then this dormitory building will be good for vocational students. And so we can just see the Lord is starting to pull some things together. It's going to be awesome. But it also allows our friends to carry on their dream for taking care of kids and educating them. Next slide. Now, our medical clinic to date has treated over 43,000 people. And that's part of your legacy now. We treat 8,300 every day, or every week, or every year. Gosh, I'm glad it isn't every week. And I certainly hope it's not every day. Oh, my gosh. I'm on 3 new meds, and it's just like, okay, I'm dizzy all the time. Now what's going to happen? So, yeah, I'm glad I'm still speaking English. But the impact in the community is huge. People know if they have no resources whatsoever, they can come to us and we'll get the highest quality medical care that we can provide. That speaks volumes. Every patient comes to a Bible study before the clinic opens. Every patient is prayed for. We have counselors on staff that talk with these guys, especially if they've found to have HIV or tuberculosis or something drastic. We've got counselors there to help them through that. And so it isn't just medical care, it's a whole range of things that are beneficial. That's part of your legacy. Thousands and thousands of people are hearing about Jesus because you guys were faithful. And that's a pretty important thing. You're getting quieter as we go. This is scary. Okay, next slide. Eden Christian Academy has 128 students. These are kids who are getting a very high-quality Christian education that would never have gone to school a day if they weren't in the situation they're in. And that's part of your legacy as well. Kids are getting an education. With an education, you can do some things. And it's a huge deal. It's bigger than you think, especially in Africa, because in Zimbabwe, if you don't have enough money, you don't get to go to school. More than half the children in the country do not go to school, not a day. And so long term, it's going to create problems for the country. Because with this massive die-off with HIV/AIDS, we're becoming a country of children. More than half the population is under 13. So huge, huge numbers of children, 2 million of them are orphans. And serious consequences, but your part in helping these kids get an education, they're gonna be the movers and shakers that help things happen, good things happen. Next slide. Eden Children's Village, residential care for orphans, is giving kids a hope, future. It's a big deal. Yeah, most kids come to us, they look very desperate, they're very hungry, they're not sure, they're safe. There's so much baggage that comes with being an orphan because the downward spiral a family goes through is horrific. You know, usually dad gets sick first. Kids drop out of school, they have to start growing something so the family can eat. They're taking care of mom and dad, they watch them decline. After dad gets sick, mom gets sick, and then they watch them die an inch at a time. And most people who die from AIDS die from candidiasis. They starve to death over a period because they can't swallow solid food at first, and then they can't swallow liquids. And so eventually they starve, and the kids have been in the middle of this all along. The trauma with that is off the charts. You can't imagine. But to live in a safe home where God's people are providing everything they need is a rich heritage for these kids. And they don't take it lightly. They love the idea that they get to go to school because not very many people get to go. And so your part in that is huge. It's absolutely huge. Next slide. Our farm feeds 800 people every day. And I think this goat, the little brown, was saying, help me, I'm going to get eaten. And he probably will be. But by the time we feed our staff and their families and our orphans, we're feeding 800 people a day. We go through 1,100 pounds of cornmeal every day of the year. And that's kind of a big deal. But we've got high-quality food for all the people that we're feeding. We know how we've grown our corn. We know how we've grown our soybeans, which we use for oil, the sunflowers for oil and stock feeds. We know how we've grown this stuff. We know the power of nutrition. It's the very first step in treating someone with AIDS. If their nutrition isn't optimal, they will get very sick very quickly and die very quickly. And so nutrition is that first big thing that has to happen. And so, you know, we got beef and dairy cattle, dairy goats, meat goats, broiler chickens, broiler rabbits, the egg operation. We have a full complement. We grow 64 kinds of vegetables, 19 kinds of tropical fruit. We move a lot of food, but it helps a lot of people. That's part of your legacy. You know, you're saving starving people so they can meet Jesus. You know, it's impossible to talk to somebody about Jesus when their biggest need is to have something in their stomachs and they're desperate for that. You feed them, then they're ready to hear. You know, you fed me. You took the time to feed me. No one else would feed me. Why is that? Well, that's because of Jesus. Yeah, he wants you fed because he wants you in his kingdom. And that's powerful. That's part of your legacy as well. So, yeah. It's all important. Next slide. Your legacy in Zimbabwe is significant because we're impacting several thousand people every year, and that's part of your legacy. And you think, well, we're just sitting here in Iowa. We didn't feel like we were doing much, but it's significant. It's important. And for those of us who are benefiting from it, the children especially, it's off the charts. It's big. And I don't want you to feel bad about that. It's only because of your faithful support and the support of people in 42 states and several foreign countries that we can do what we do. We can't just go over there and do what we want to do. We have to have a huge team of people over here helping us make it happen. And so I hope you're delighted in being part of it because your part is big. It's very big. Next slide. We want to leave you with a blessing today because you've been so generous with us. And you know, when Jesus told us about the Lord's Prayer, he said, pray something like this. But when God gave the Aaronic blessing, he said, say these exact words. And that's out of number 6. And in English, it comes across, the Lord bless and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And that sounds powerful. But, you know, I love Koine Greek, the Koine Greek of the New Testament, because it's ultra-specific. I mean, it just zeroes straight in. Very, very specific language. I love Hebrew because it's like an onion. There's layers and layers and layers of meaning. So I want to give you this blessing. This is from Susan and I. We want to give you this blessing, and this is the expanded version of what the Aaronic blessing is really saying. May Yahweh kneel before you presenting gifts, the blessings you need in your walk with him. Yahweh keep you protected, safe and sound, with a hedge of protection, literally thorns, and the blessings he's imparted on you. Yahweh make his face, his presence, shine his light, his illumination, and brightness on you as you dwell in the presence of God, as you abide in and obey his word. And may Yahweh bend down to show you kindness, grace, favor, and pity. Yahweh turn his face and countenance, his presence towards you as he smiles upon you and shows you kindness, comfort, confidence, approval, and ultimately peace. And may Yahweh put in place, gift you, and compassionately extend shalom, completeness, soundness, prosperity, tranquility, contentment, peace, friendship, supernatural health, welfare, safety, protection, rest, and harmony on your life. God bless you for having us today. God bless you for helping us. We treasure your friendship and your partnership. God bless you in every way possible.